This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning right to you, Laurie. Another great day in Fairhope, Alabama. I have to say Happy New Year again. And the reason I want to do that is because when we were talking last Monday, Tulane was supposed to be playing in the Cotton Bowl that afternoon. And guess what? As a Tulane graduate and a former football player at Tulane, we beat USC 46-45. So the new year is off to a good start.
How exciting.
In some ways, for us, it's a good start. But from the political world's perspective, it was kind of crazy last week, okay? And so, folks, what I wanted to do this morning was to kind of tease out some of the issues that came about as we watched what was going on with the election of the new Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, okay? And the best way for me to do that, I thought, was to get in touch with our House member, District 1 Congressman Jerry Carl. And so I spoke to him, and he graciously accepted my invitation to come on, and he's on the phone right now. So, Congressman Carl, good morning, and thank you for coming on.
Good morning, Dr. Lou. It is my pleasure to be on your program. I think this is the first time I've been on your program.
I think it is. I think it's since last year. We haven't had you at the Common Sense Campaign either. I think we had you at maybe September, October of last year. So, I mean, or 21. So I know that you and I have talked about getting you back to a Common Sense Campaign meeting, and we'll do that just as soon as your schedule works itself out, okay?
I don't know if most people know it or not, but the Common Sense Campaign actually supported and helped me the first time I ran for county commission. So I'm a product of common sense upbringing.
Well, I think people do recognize that we did support you when you were running for the first time against Bill Hightower. And I do think that, you know, to a very large degree, the ads that I ran in support of you, our radio ads over here, did help you, because I think Hightower had won in the original election, but in the runoff, the ads that I ran actually got you over the top here on the Eastern Shore. So we've been there for you, Jerry. But I have to say, you know, as with everything with politics, there are ups and downs, and I do think that this current issue, you know, will allow us an opportunity for you to kind of reach out to this audience and to Common Sense when you get a chance to get to visit with us, and kind of give us your view of what happened and the interpretation you have placed on it, so that we'll have a better understanding of exactly what we can expect going forward with this. And I think there are high expectations. I think there are some people who have written that what took place last week and the deals, quote unquote deals, that were made were transformative in many respects in terms of moving the House of Representatives back to a position that it used to be in, with regular order and things like that. So I think that's one of the things that I'd like to just ask you right out of the chute here. You know, what is your sense of what took place? Do you think it is transformative, or do you think, as some of the critics say, this is all the deals that McCarthy made are just going to lead to paralysis and a lot of, you know, angst over the next 2 years?
Well, you know, the deals that everybody's referring to, there's so much positive that came out of those deals. You know, you got more transparency, you know, accountability's up. You know, we got 72 hours to read a bill, which keep in mind, under Pelosi, we would get them, and sometime 3 or 4 hours later, we were voting on them. So there's a lot of positive things that came out of that meeting. People watch sausage being made on TV all week. Dr. Lou, I know with your political background, you understand most of that happens behind closed doors.
Right.
The same scenario would have played out in behind closed doors, but there wouldn't have been any TV cameras. There all that drama and all that drawn out drama would have not played out behind closed doors as much. So, you know, everyone saw the sausage being made. We love the final product, but it's a struggle to get there. We need more debates on the floor. We need to be debating our leaders and making sure that they're going to lead us in the right direction and do things. Of course, there's a handful of things in it that I don't like, but, you know, that is just, you know, that's part of the art of negotiating. You're not going to get everything you want, and sometimes you have to hold your nose and keep moving. I'm very nervous of going back to this one person being able to call the speaker for a vote. That makes me nervous, not from our own delegation or our group, but from the Democrat Party side. So anytime they sense a little friction in the air between us, which always happens, Republican and Democrat have that, they can call a vote and try to get that 218 to be 217. So I think it's going to cause a lot of problems, but, you know, everyone seems to be okay with it. I'll express myself and move on, but, you know, we have to focus on this nation being a safer nation. We got to stop all this bickering and start focusing on the economy. And you know, we got to get the economy back up and standing. You know, we got a future, and you know, we got to build our future on freedom. You know, there's so many of these things we take for granted that have been stripped from us under this administration. So, and we got to, you know, make the government even more and more accountable. I understand. I see what happens up here, and I think it's probably easy for me to say that accountability could certainly use a little upgrade up here. So we're, you know, those are some of the things. So what happened last week is a good thing. It's truly a good thing. We need to see more of that. Maybe not in a public setting, but we need to see more of that behind closed doors.
Well, to that point about public accountability, I saw that on CBS, Representative Mace was on there along with Representative Gonzalez from El Paso. Both of them expressed concerns about the backroom deal-making. The public part of it, which we all saw, was one thing. But Mace in particular made a point that she may not vote for the rules that are coming up. I think you all will be doing that today, because she wants more accountability on what was said behind closed doors. Now, here again, I'm not here to put you on the spot about this stuff, but I do think that, you know, you just said something about kind of moving on. We've got to, you know, do something and make sure that we've got our stuff together to deal with the Democrats and all like that. So, I mean, do you think, though, that as you look at the rules that are being looked at, and again, I think you're absolutely right that some of these things are absolutely necessary, going back to regular order, 72 hours for you to look at a bill. I mean, some people would like to have, you know, 75, you know, more than 72 hours. But the point is, these kinds of things and the promises made about spending and getting other certain votes on the line about term limits and balanced budgets, I mean, those things are good. But on the other hand, you have folks like, you know, Representative Mace, who really, you know, kind of put a different spin on this deal. So, I mean, what is your sense of that? And do you think that the Mace view could very well lead to problems adopting the rules that were agreed upon?
Well, the rules we agreed upon are cut in stone. I think what she's referring to are the other deals, which
yes, the backroom deals, yeah.
And other things other than the rules itself. And I think that's where the problem is going to start. It's all intertwined. Understand that. I have not seen a list of these deals, quote unquote. I committed last week to support the rules package. I'm still in favor of getting this rule package passed because we need to move on. But I sure would like to see this list of deals, and I think what Mace is saying is the same thing. She wants to see what deals were made, what was given up before we sign off on the whole package, and I agree with that. I mean, that's only common sense.
Right.
And I'm sure that leadership will share that with us as quick as they can. But, I mean, when you got congressmen going on TV telling, you know, what they got out of the deal, That's just not good medicine. It's just not good.
Right.
So we've got to learn a little bit more about what the deal actually was.
Okay, well, let me just ask you this, not to pick on this, but to the point that the Freedom Caucus, it looks as though they are going to have more power within the committees and committee assignments, those sorts of things. Is that something which would necessarily bring you to the point where you would question this? I mean, I know that you're not part of the Freedom Caucus, but I think that you're conservative enough to go along with the arguments that have been made about why we need to transform how the House works. Is that a fair statement?
But Lou, this is not just a Freedom Caucus issue, because 70% of the Freedom Caucus voted with McCarthy on the first vote. These are individuals. I hate to see the Freedom Caucus get labeled as the reason why we spent 4.5 days last week voting on this. It's not Freedom Caucus. It's individuals, and that's what I would like for everyone to hear, because 70% of the Freedom Caucus agreed with it. Now, I just want to see. I'm not saying that any deals made are bad. I'm saying I would just like to see them.
Right.
The fact that the quote unquote Freedom Caucus gets more of a voice on the committees, I don't think that's a bad. I can't think of any reason why that would be bad in my mind.
Right.
I think those seats should be earned and not given. Now, that's one area that I might have a little problem. But it, you know, if we're going to work together, and that's what it takes for us to work together, hey, I'm okay with it. But again, I want to see the final product.
Right. Well, let's transfer over to, you know, from the sausage making to some substantive questions about.
Good.
What's going
right
on? I'm sure you're ready to get away from the sausage making after being up there for a whole week with that. Let's talk about issues pertaining to the Department of Defense, the FBI, the CIA, and the weaponization that Biden has chosen to go after their political opponents, as we've seen. Okay, now I know that Jim Jordan is going to be, you know, chair of the Judiciary Committee, and one of his things is to be getting involved with finding out how in the world this has happened and the degree to which, you know, we can illuminate it and then move against all of the absolute outrageous approaches that have been allowed over the past, I would say it's not just the past 2 years. I mean, you've seen the FBI involved with, you know, going after Trump, and there's no question about this. And we can like Trump or hate him, but this whole business of the collusion with Russia issue, they knew exactly that the dossier was a false document, and yet they went ahead and went to a Pfizer court judge and lied to him. I mean, this is beyond the pale, Jerry. And I think that if there is a line in the sand or a red line that we have to draw, it's here. And how we can, once the Jordan Committee, you know, gets to the bottom of all of it, then the next question is, what do you think can be done in terms of the fact that, you know, you're just one of the three branches of government, and, you know, we do not control the Senate or the White House. So what do you think?
What we can be, though, we can be the voice. And the voice, first of all, I'm extremely excited Jim Jordan has taken that committee over. There's no better person in this country to run that than Jim Jordan.
Right.
I told him that 6 months ago. I'll say it today. And that's the reason why Jim didn't want to run for Speaker. He wants that position. So he's already getting started. You know, you'll start seeing subpoenas filed, get people in to speak, and we'll start digging into stuff. It's our job as the other members to support Jim, and how we can support Jim is to get the message out. And the message is going to be, you know, what he starts digging up and what he starts finding, start sharing that message back in our district so people understand. One of the first things we're going to do is the IRS. We're going to defund those 87,000 IRS agents. We can do that here in Congress. Obviously, it goes to the Senate and let the Senate answer for how they vote. It's election year for many, many of them coming up in 2024, and it's a very sensitive issue for Republicans and Democrat constituents. So let's they're going to react and respond once it gets to the Senate, because that one will without a doubt pass here in Congress. I couldn't imagine it not passing the Republican side. And, you know, we've got to stop our government from harassing our citizens. You know, you're talking about the FBI. We need the FBI. We need FBI on a local basis. But the FBI leadership up here in Washington, D.C. has been corrupt. It goes back to J. Edgar Hoover, if you really want to get serious about this. So we're going to start digging into that. There's no doubt about that. That's part of Jim's job that he's graciously volunteered to do. You know, he's going to look into the DOJ. He's going to look into the CIA. They're going to look into the FBI. I mean, they're going to start looking at these things where these three branches have literally targeted citizens based on their political beliefs. You know, if somebody wants to believe different than me, that's their business. I'm not going to politically pull them out and do things to them and their families for believing different. This is what this country's built on. Freedom of speech, and so what you're going to see those three agencies start being chipped away with, and I think it's going to be something, especially in our district, we'll be very proud of. Because don't believe for a second those 87,000 IRS agents, gun-carrying IRS agents, are going just after the wealthy. That is foolish beliefs. Anybody that believes that.
Well, I mean, listen, I can't disagree about what you just said about the IRS business, but, you know, I think the concern we have with the FBI and the hand-in-glove relationship between outside entities such as, you know, the school board, the American School Board Association, writing a letter to the Biden administration, and the next thing you know, concerned, you know, they're concerned for parents going after school board members. You saw this in Virginia, and that really led to what I would argue is a very positive revolution in terms of confronting these people who are running the schools and creating all of this anti-American stuff we're dealing with. But the point here is that if you're going to move against these people who are willing to label parents as terrorists, then, I mean, and look what they've just done. This January 6th committee leaked out the special information on people like Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, his Social Security number for he and his family. I mean, they're willing to weaponize these agencies, and I think that the degree to which, you know, you have the power of the purse to curtail some of this, to cut back on it. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, look, Jerry, I mean, it's all starting, so I don't expect to have, you know, ironclad answers right away. But I do think that conceptually speaking, there has to be a way that you all can isolate the bad apples in the FBI, for instance, and start moving from a power of the purse thing, bargaining with other, you know, entities, that we're cutting this budget if we don't start seeing reforms on the block right away, or something along those lines.
Well, the power of the purse and the subpoena power are the two biggest things we've got to go after them with. So we're going to use everything in our toolbox to get to the answer. And the answer may not be what we want, but we're going to get to the answer. So, again, that's Jim Jordan. Our job, that are not on that committee, is to support him in any way. And we've committed to do that. And you'll hear me talk about a lot of the things that he's digging in and what he's looking at. I mean, the Hunter Biden issues, top of the heap. You know, we're gonna check this Hunter Biden thing out. And that one's pretty self-explanatory for me. It gets a little more complicated in the FBI and the other branches of government. But let's just plan on, you know, strapping in, getting your popcorn, and just hanging on, because it's just gonna get rowdy up here.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you're right about the Hunter Biden thing. There's no question about that. But the Hunter Biden cover-up, you know, is, to my way of thinking, and what I think many of us are worried about, is that the Biden's relationship to our enemies, whether it's China, Russia, whatever, where they're taking money from, I mean, it's clear that they have been compromised. I mean, Biden goes to Bali, doesn't talk to Xi about anything pertaining to fentanyl, anything pertaining to human rights. the Uyghur population being, you know, in a genocidal approach of what they're doing. I mean, he's quiet about this stuff. And it seems to me that the fact that, and we've talked about this, you know, on the show and other places, obviously, that, this issue with Taiwan, I mean, Xi has his problems right now, okay? The whole, you know, collapse of his COVID approach, the protests that were going on, their economic problems that they're having, all of these things suggest that even though Xi has all this power, he has some internal problems that may very well lead him, as many of these dictators do, to find an outside source to deflect what is going on internally and go after Taiwan. And I've made the point here, you know, this question of strategic ambiguity is a recipe for a disaster. We're inviting it. But my point here is that if we're going to look at the Hunter Biden, you know, problems with the laptop, then it seems like it has to be a broader question about the real impact on the compromises that the Chinese have been able to make, not only with the Biden people, but this whole question about what they're doing with, you know, purchasing land close to our military bases, the Confucius Institutes. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of stuff that we can go through, but the point is,
and
China
agree,
is an enemy.
It all starts with the laptop. Everything we need is on that laptop to start the domino effect. And the domino effect will lead us in several different directions. It's not going to be just Chinese, but there's several things on there that have not come out yet. And I'm not saying that like I know it. I know they're holding a lot back.
Okay.
I'll make that clear.
Is that going to be...
There's several things on there that's going to take us in a lot of directions. But it's got to start revealing what's on that laptop for everyone to understand why we're moving in that direction.
Okay. Now, is that going to be under Jordan's discretion there?
Yes.
Or, and I guess here again we get into what's the priority going to be? Is it going to be to, you know, unearth this whole business of the compromised, you know, nature of this regime that I would say we have in D.C.? Or are they going to is he going to focus on something else? I mean, what's your sense of that?
Well, I can only give you my opinion because, you know, I'm not Jim Jordan. I'm around Jim all the time, but I can't tell you how he thinks. But, you know, I think the easiest thing is to start with a laptop and start disclosing that, showing the connections between the Biden administration, our family, and the Chinese, and that will start that domino effect. You know, there's so many things on there there's people, there's places, there's time, there's money.
Right.
I mean, if it's true, it's certainly impeachable stuff. I think the impeachment conversation needs to be carried on way down the road, not at the beginning. Let's put this case together before we start going in that direction. But the Biden administration's got a lot to answer for, and it's Jim Jordan's responsibility to undig it. And Jim can't do it by himself.
Yes,
Jim
exactly.
Jim will put some subcommittees together to actually help support and dig into maybe just the Chinese side of it. But, well, you know, just the intel we lose every day to the Chinese government from tapping in here. Most people don't understand what it costs us to develop that intel, and then for it just to be stolen overnight is just incredible. It happens every day, every day.
All right, let me just ask you this. In terms of, you know, the number of priorities that we have out there, I mean, serious issues, okay, I've heard that there's going to be a subcommittee on China itself. Is that the case that you understand? And are you going to be involved with that, or how is that going to work?
I hope to be on appropriations, which is an aid committee, and to my knowledge, and they certainly have not asked me to be on that committee. They're probably going to look more to congressmen and congresswomen that have legal backgrounds to sit on that committee. I would think they would. But if they were to ask me to sit on that committee, I would love to serve on that committee. But my guess is they're going to try to find more legals that can sit on that committee and understand, you know, the maneuvers.
Right. Well, let me ask
you
this.
I have not seen who's going to serve on that committee yet.
Okay. So what committees are you going to be on? Do you know for sure right now?
Well, appropriations, I hope to be on appropriations, which which is a full-time job. We've got to focus on one of the things that did come out of last week is if anybody wants to spend more money, they got to show us where we can save that same amount of money by cutting somewhere else.
Right.
There's departments here that have been financed for years that have no employees, that no one works in, but yet there's money going through that department. Now, that could be due a couple of ways, but, you know, everybody says, well, it's a way that, you know, the CIA and other agencies can move money out. Well, we need to stop that. We need to know how much the CIA or any other group's getting from the taxpayers. So you're going to see us start focusing on closing some of these. Some of the social issues, everybody's got to get ready for that. Everybody says, well, you know, don't fool with Medicare, don't fool with Medicaid. I understand that, but, you know, when you start fooling with social issues, everybody starts screaming. So it's not going to be from an appropriation standpoint, it's going to be a rough 2 years. But I'm ready. You know, I'll do it. It's going to make some people happy and some people mad. But that's a full, it's an A committee. So there's nothing usually the A committee are asked to do or help in. Now, it may change with what we've got going on here, but
right,
we'll see. I'm also trying to get a carve out for natural resources. I have asked for that. That's been something. And the reason for that is because of the oil industry in the Gulf. I think we need a representative from the Gulf Coast on that, in that conversation. I've been driving that conversation for 2 years, and I think I can continue to represent the Gulf Coast and snapper fishing. I mean, snapper's a huge issue in our district. If it's left up to this bunch of bureaucrats up here, there won't be another fish caught in the American waters.
Right.
They're okay with buying tuna from Japan or Chinese fishermen more than they are letting our own people make a living. So there's a lot of things that I'll be doing behind the scenes that you won't see. Jim Jordan will take all the spotlight. I'm good with that. I'm fine with that. My job is to support Jim and what he needs.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the appropriations question in the bigger picture. My understanding is that McCarthy wants to use the fiscal year 22 budget numbers as your baseline, so that we're not going to just automatically grow the budget, okay? And I think that certainly is an excellent idea. If I'm not mistaken, you know, people have floated that before. Paul Ryan did it, but it didn't go anywhere. And part of the reason it doesn't go anywhere is that the Democrats are going to say, well, you're cutting the budget. And this is all pertaining to, as I understand it, the area that you have an opportunity, not the mandated budget, but areas where you've got some flexibility. So if that goes on, the question that has come up, particularly from the defense folks, they don't want to see the Defense Department budget, you know, put in that position, because with inflation and the shortage that really Biden had put in his budget, but you all built that up, I think, during the omnibus business. So you have a situation where we're giving the China threat and other arguments to be made, that trying to adhere to the fiscal 22, you know, budget line may it may not really work for dealing with defense. Can you kind of make those adjustments without abandoning the whole idea? I mean, everybody can make the same case that the Defense Department is, hey, we need the money.
Well, we're conservatives, we're Republicans. You know, we're less social issues and more about defense of our country. So we've got to figure out how, and this is what I was talking about, people getting uncomfortable. We start looking at these social packages that they get started, they never stop.
Right.
Now, I'll tell you one key to start looking for is all these social issues that have been rocking on for years require the Congress to vote on every year. They don't vote on them every year. They're just automatically rolled over. So
right.
You'll start seeing us getting a little more tight. We'll require them to be voted on. We want to know who's for them and who's against them. Right now, we're in control. Right now, we control the checkbook, so we can do stuff like that. And we will, so we can start chipping away at some of this other stuff from Medicare. You know, Medicaid is another conversation for another day. Medicare and Social Security, everyone's most focused on not being touched. And but our defense industry, I'm not saying that we give another 10% for the defense industry. Well, let's find some ways of saving money. Let me give you a good example of what I'm talking about here. You look at the tanker deal in Mobile. We lost it. We won it. We lost it. Now, last time we lost it, Boeing's got it. Boeing is 8 years late delivering that aircraft. It still doesn't work 100%. They brag about they can refuel 98% of the planes flying. That's not comfortable in my mind if I'm one of that 2% flying a different plane. But yet, you've got a Secretary of the Air Force that wants to turn around a no-bid contract and give it to Boeing. That's the kind of stuff that we've got to stand up and scream and fight against. Because if it gets put back up for bid, you're going to see a better plane, probably at a more reasonable price. There's no such thing as cheap in Washington, D.C. A more reasonable price that will be delivered in a timely manner at 100%. So those are the things we've got to start calling out from a committee standpoint. And we're prepared to do it. We've been taking notes for the last 2 years, trust me. So
right.
There's ways of saving money up here without just going and just screaming at everybody, we're going to go back to 2022 budget. I think that's a horrible way to manage. I understand why they did it. I'm not saying it's wrong, but my style is a little bit different than that. Let's use that as a point of reference instead of a stick to start whipping people like the defense industry and some of the other programs. So defense industry is very important, especially with the Chinese buildup. Hey, we got our own war going down on the southern borders. We got to do something down there. I'm so hot about
exactly.
that. I'm tired of our kids.
Yeah.
And our little short conversation here, I bet you there's been 20 to 25 people die of overdose fentanyl. We got a war going on fentanyl right now. And we got to start fighting back at some point, place, and time. So we've got to do some things that the Defense Department are going to be very uncomfortable.
Well, before I get away from budget issues, I think it is important to note that we now have, almost $32 trillion in debt, okay? The interest rates have gone up to where now just to service the debt, you're talking about a quarter of the federal budget. So the question really is at this point, along with what we're talking about in terms of trying to stabilize spending, bring it down keep it at FY22 levels. I think McCarthy's talked about making this a plan to have a balanced budget in 10 years, okay? And I know that Paul Ryan said the same thing when he became Speaker, okay? So here we are 10 years later and nothing's happened. So
we have a 10-year plan. That will be introduced. It will be put into motion. We will fall under that 10-year plan. Now, we can only, Congress is only put here for 2 years at a time.
Right.
So should should the Republicans hold it over the next 5 terms, obviously we should have a balanced budget. That's one.
Okay.
Two, you want to get that debt down. Let's get a good, strong economy where people feel comfortable going out and spending money. No one likes to spend taxes. Spend money on taxes, but if you want to get that debt paid down, that is one area that nobody's talking about. Let's get a strong economy. Let's get everybody happy where they want to go out and buy a new boat or a new car or a new house.
Right.
So that's a quick way to pay it down.
Well,
we've got to start chipping away from here. How can we reduce it on this hill? Because there is a ton of waste up here.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that there's a ton of ways, because obviously the economy grew under the Trump leadership and what they did with the tax cuts and all like that. I get that. But in the long run, I mean, the question of the debt really remains a major dagger in the heart of the country, number one. And number two, you've got a specific bill or a problem coming up in terms of raising the debt limit. So without getting into the minutiae of all that, the question that many of us have is the degree to which there's got to be a plan not to just get to a balanced budget, which is certainly a part of the overall solution, but back to trying to reduce the debt and make some progress towards that. I mean, it seems to me that that, and again, we don't have to get into a economics 101 discussion, but it seems to me like if you take it down to the household level, you know, you don't want to have, you know, too much debt to income ratio and things like that. And so, all I would suggest is this: as you're looking at appropriations and things like that, there has to be a longer view of that is incorporated into what we're doing. And yes, you're right. Every 2 years, it's going to change, and Republicans better hold on to this, you know, for at least, you know, this, you know, five times, so that we at least get there. But I do hope that as you talk about these things with your colleagues, that they do take the longer view. And this question about what's coming up to raise the debt, I mean, it seems like that's just another one of these issues that you've got people, you know, going in different directions on. But we don't have to get into that go ahead.
You want to fix Washington, D.C., and I haven't figured out how to do it yet, but if we can find a way of handcuffing the bureaucrats, that's the way to fix Washington, D.C., because they know they're going to out survive me. They know I'm here for only 2 years, and I have to get reelected. But they've been here for years and years and years.
Oh,
they're
exactly.
The ones behind the scene writing all these policies. They're the ones that just keep filling the coffers full of money. That's the real bad guys here. It's not even the Democrats on the floor, because they're pawns too. But it's actually the your bureaucracy up here is unbelievable. And some of these people have been behind closed doors. They're moving in the dark. You know, they leave these jobs, and they get these cushy jobs at these Wall Street firms after spending 40 years up here for a reason.
Well, I mean, Jerry, that's absolutely
correct.
So if
you want to fix it, we've got to figure out how to stop the bureaucrats without losing that institutional knowledge. Now, that's important. Without losing that institutional knowledge, and move them to a different department, to a different place, and get them out of the same place for 40 years.
Well, I think that, you know, Nixon had it right that the bureaucracy was his main threat, and he was going to deal with it. And of course, Watergate took care of that. But, you know, the argument that has been made is that these unelected bureaucrats put forth all of their mandates. And again, it's just recently where Congress, and I can't remember exactly where it was, you may not have been there when it happened, but the Republicans did pass a bill that requires that any time there is a $100 million impact on what is going on with these, you know, unelected bureaucrats mandating certain things, then Congress had to review it. The real question is that $100 million really needs to be brought down, and the only way that you can bring that down is to shrink the bureaucrats and force them to live under the rules that are put out by Congress. And I think that and here again, you get right into the question of freedom being attacked by all of these bureaucrats and their bureaucratic rules. And I think that is almost a separate, you know, committee that should be established to look at these various rules that have been put out and start getting rid of them. The Environmental Protection Agency and all like that. You know how goes.
Don't get me started on those things.
Yes, I know, exactly. So I mean, Jerry, I think that if you just really take a close look at the reformist nature of what took place this week, and I think it is healthy, and it is really transformative, but it won't be transformative unless you dig into the weeds and dig out these bureaucrats, and not just the weaponization of the agencies like we've talked about, but these are the people who make decisions on a daily basis that impact all of us.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to get into that.
But short, but I got a committee meeting I got to be at here in about 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's just kind of, you know, thank you right on here for coming on, and I know that you told me you had a half an hour, and I know that it really is difficult to get it. So just in the last 4 minutes, give us a sense of what your priorities are for our district. What are the top issues, and what you think you can do, like for the I-10 Bay Bridge? What is your sense on your top priorities for down here?
Well, obviously, I'm very encouraged that the state and local leaders are continue working on that project. I mean, that's first and foremost. I was able to secure about $3.5 million to improve the causeway, which will help on the congestion on the bay itself. So, you know, there's just everyone wants us to, you know, write a check from a federal government standpoint. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
But I will keep working to find any federal dollars I can, but there's really no magic pot of federal dollars we can pull this from. That's one. Two, you know, there's several priorities in the district that I really love working on. Our veteran community, I love our vets. You know, the red snapper issue, which is not important to a lot of people unless you spend $200,000 to buy a boat and they tell you you can only catch two fish. That's when it gets pretty personal. The port itself, you know, that drives so much economic portion of the entire state. It's not just about Mobile Baldwin County. That's a state issue there, so we've got to keep working on that. Infrastructure itself, you know, trying to work with local leaders. How can we help? Well, let's talk about Baldwin County there. You have some true infrastructure needs there with volumes of traffic coming to and from the beaches.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've got to work with them. The shipbuilding industry. I mean, we're fixing to see an explosion there in the shipbuilding industry between Austell and of course, our shipbuilders down in Ballabatry. You know, Airbus, we got the possibility of the KC-46 bid coming up. I am fighting tooth and toenail to get that tanker rebid out. If it's rebid out, I feel pretty comfortable Airbus is going to get it.
Right.
Because they've been building that plane for years. It's not a new plane for them. So, you know, I'll continue to fight for the security of all of us in South Alabama and make sure that our tax dollars are used wisely. I mean, how much more can you ask for from a leader than that? I don't know that you would send up here.
Well, listen, I know that you're running out of time, so if there's any final word that you want to leave with the audience, please take advantage of it. And then I know you've got to get going.
You know, the only thing I want people to work with me on is patience, because we truly, I mean, this is 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for me. It's not a 9-to-5 job.
Right.
It is for most of the people up here, but it doesn't happen overnight. Be patient. I love input. I love people give me their opinion. I get my best ideas from other people. So keep that coming, but be patient. Continue to support our military. Continue to support our law enforcement. I mean, continue to keep us in your prayers, both sides of the aisle. And let's see how we can move forward and save this country, because we're in a spiral right now. We got to get it leveled out before we can start bringing it back up in altitude.
Well, I certainly, you know, subscribe to the idea that we've got to, you know, save this country. And I think that a sense of urgency, you've seen a sense of urgency, you know, I think last week in just talking about how things are going and what we have to do. I think people understand that. And yes, patience is part of that. But I think that the opportunity that you all have right now is significant, and it can be transformative if you all, you know, get together and make it happen. And that's what I think we're all praying for, Jerry.
Well, that's where I'm headed here in just a few minutes, if we can get some stuff ironed out. So,
well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and we'll be in touch.
I appreciate you, Dr. Luke.
Get you down here. All right, take care.
Let's try to do this on a regular basis if we can.
We'll definitely work that out, okay?
Thank you, Congressman.
All right.
Take care. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Very nice.
Well, Miss Lori, yeah, I mean, it is important to touch base with your elected officials. And again, you know, it's stuff that common sense does, along with other grassroots organizations. And I think that, you know, I've got a few minutes left now, and I want to just kind of talk about some of those other things. But from the perspective of the grassroots conservatives here, patience is part of what he says, and I agree with that. But on the other hand, the sense of urgency that I think we all feel is that you've got the border. We didn't get a chance to talk about the border, But this border problem is not just a border problem with Texas and Arizona and those people on the border. It's everywhere. I mean, Abbott has sent, you know, thousands of people to New York and Washington, D.C., which is a good tactic. We need to do stuff like that. Let these sanctuary cities, you know, live up to their sanctuary goals. Well, here they are, and look at how they're squealing about it. I mean, Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York. I mean, they, and you saw what happened when DeSantis sent some people to Nantucket or whatever the hell it was up there in New England. I mean, it just, it's easy to be, you know, taking the moral high ground, you know, oh, let them all in, it's okay. But as soon as it comes to your place, then they don't want it.
Right.
You know, and that is the BS factor that has to stop. But there has to be a sense of urgency on the part of our lawmakers to get on with this and stop all this stuff. And here again, we get back to politics 101. What happened to the red wave? Okay, we were supposed to have this tsunami, which was going to, you know, kick butt. Well, it didn't happen. I mean, so is this a matter that's dealing with stolen elections? I mean, I think that Carrie Lake had her election stolen. There's no question about that. But, oh, my God, I'm an election denier. Well, I've never been an election acceptor from 2020. We've said this all along, that that 2020 election had so many fundamental problems with it. And some of those problems have been solved. Some of them have been fixed. But then here you have Maricopa County doing the same thing they did in 2020. And it's controlled by the stupid Republicans. Okay? So we have this situation where, you know, the nation is at a crisis point, and yet how is it that we don't have the red wave? I mean, that's a combination. There are a combination of factors that created that, and we've talked about it already. But clearly, Common Core and the anti-American socialist agenda that was part and parcel of what Obama's fundamentally changing America was all about is in play here. I mean, you have a younger generation, the 18 to 22-year-old people that have grown up with Common Core, you know, the anti-American, and again, how many times I've said this, you know, we're misogynist, we're homophobic, we're racist, we're imperialist, we're all of it. And these people go to college, they get this jammed down their throats, and they have to sit there and take it because, hey, you want to get an A in your class, you better not cross that professor, okay? And then in theory, you won't, you know, change your own, you know, approaches to looking at politics and issues. But deep down, it starts having an effect. Okay? And I think that where we are at this point takes us right to the transformation of how the House does business. And that means the regular order. Okay, you have a bill that comes up. It's brought before the committee. They have hearings. They actually have expert opinions come to talk about whether or not this bill is really worthwhile. I mean, just because it's a bill doesn't mean that you can do it, you know? And then it goes through regular process in terms of being analyzed for its impact on the budget. And again, what they're talking about in terms of not only going back to fiscal year 22, but the impact on, you know, what the spending has to do. Are we going to spend here and cut over there? Well, they talk about doing that. Well, we'll see if they're going to do it. But here again, we get back to a fundamental problem with the whole American process over the last 50 years. It's the growth of the welfare state, okay, where people are dependent upon their handouts from the government. And as such, and this is the Democrat Party more than any other entity, and Lyndon Johnson talked about this, you know, getting people dependent upon the government. And he talked about it within the black community. And again, I mean, the growth of the dependency class is something that can't just be, you know, blinked away. Not if you're going to have real reforms. And again, note what Gingrich and Clinton did together in the 90s. They passed a welfare reform bill, which Obama quickly undid. I mean, here again, you talk about the budget. You talk about the debt. You talk about how we deal with this. Lots of moving parts to it. So as McCarthy, you know, moves into the speakership, you know, he's taking a small D democratic approach to it, giving more power to the committee chairs. The danger for that, though, is that nothing gets done. And we're all sitting here anxiously awaiting for things to get done. And of course, Pelosi got things done. And I mean, look at the media. They love her. She is the best Speaker of the House ever. She got things done. Well, look how she did it. She was a dictator. You know, you cross her, the guillotine is there. Now, I mean, maybe that's the only way to do things. I get that. But it's not the way we think it should be done. And so, yes, if there's a little bit of paralysis, if the sausage making is problematic at times, Jerry Carl's right. We have to be patient with that. But as we are patient, we should not lose our sense of urgency about focusing on the major issues. So I think that's going to be something that we as the grassroots here in Alabama have got to be able to convey that to all of our elected officials at all levels, which takes me to a transition to a state issue, okay? You all know that we've been trying to get rid of Common Core for all these years. And we have suggested, because we can never get a Common Core bill out of the Education Committee in the House, there was a Common Core bill that came out of the Senate, but that's because the leader of the Senate wanted it to get out, so he got it passed, and it came out, and it went to the House and died. Okay, why does it die in the House? Because Terry Collins is the chair of the Education Committee, and she will not let these replacement bills for Common Core come to a vote. All right, so what we have suggested, and it has never happened, but it may happen tomorrow, is that the conservatives offer rules that are adopted for the upcoming session. And the rule that we are pushing is for, particularly in the Education Committee, but it applies to all of them, if a bill comes before, in this particular case, a Common Core replacement bill comes to the Education Committee again, then if the committee chair, Terry Collins, won't let it be voted on, then if a majority of the committee members want to do this, they will be allowed to have a vote and force it out of committee. That's the only way that we think that we can break this logjam. So you're thinking, oh, well, that's a good idea. Yeah, it is a good idea. But guess what? We just found out that the Rules Committee is supposed to be meeting tomorrow in the House. And we're scrambling right now to try to make sure that our members who have been supportive of what we've been trying to do work together to force the rules to be adopted to let a bill be voted on in the committee. And if the majority of the committee wants it to come out, it comes out. Okay? That's small D democracy. But we are up against powerful forces that don't want that to happen. Okay? The educational establishment, which is wedded to Common Core, they don't want any part of that. But here's an interesting thing that we did find out, that the new speaker, Ledbetter, former Democrat, part of what he's trying to do that affects the grassroots is to move the amount of time that the committee chairs have to announce that there's going to be a committee meeting. Right now, they have to give us 24 hours if they are going to have a meeting so that the public can participate. Listen to this, all right? Just listen. They are now proposing that after the 20th day of the session, the committees only need to give us 4 hours before notification that there's going to be a committee hearing that could be open to the public. And all this is an attempt. It has two reasons. One, they're going to argue, well, everything gets so jammed up at the end, we have to do it this way. We need time. That's BS too. The other part of it is they don't want the grassroots coming to these stupid committee hearings to hear what we're saying. And that's another high BS factor that we are going to say they can, well, okay, she's hitting the button.
My hand's
already
on the button. She's
hitting the button. So we are going to fight this, okay? So next week, when I get on here on Monday, I won't be saying Happy New Year, but I may be giving you some good news if we have some rules changes and we can stop some of the stupidity that's going on there. Because what this guy Ledbetter is trying to do is shut things down, make it more efficient, blah, blah, blah. The hell with that. The grassroots is going to be heard. Okay, so Lori and I have had a good morning this morning. Certainly is great to be here. Certainly thank, you know, Congressman Carr for coming on.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate you all listening. So until next week, adios. And I'll see you next Monday. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lou. This is WABF. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. This is WABF, Mobile, Fairhope, great music and memories. Resuming regular programming.
Lift me, won't you lift me?